Today's topic is amplifying women's voices with Elsie Escobar. And hopefully by the end of the show, you'll find the confidence to find your own voice.
Welcome to the Well Woman Show, where we interview women executives, leaders, and entrepreneurs.
And you're listening to the Well Woman Show,
where motivated women achieve fulfillment and well-being.
You're listening to the Well Woman Show.
Take time for myself by coming to things like Well Woman Drinks.
To be accepting of myself no matter what. Step away from judgment as much as possible.
You're listening to the Well Women Show.
You're going to be in for a good ride. I don't regret anything. Everything I've ever done, I've learned from it, one way or another, good or bad.
Being a little bit selfish for yourself, you know, put your own oxygen mask on first and then give what's left.
I'm a woman. I would prefer to tell my own story. My story, though it's very personal, is universal.
You're listening to the Well Woman Show. And now your host, Giovanna Rossi.
Hi, Giovanna Rossi here, and welcome to another episode of The Well Woman Show, where I interview women leaders, executives, and entrepreneurs about their lives and their road to becoming and being who they are today. Are you feeling burned out or finding it hard to focus on your goals? Or are you in transition? Well, you're not alone. We all need to activate our superpowers. These are the internal strengths and abilities we all already have but don't use all the time. Superpowers can be cultivated, and they include empathy, love, intuition, courage, and more. As always, this episode is brought to you by Well Woman Life, a global community of women living our best lives. Whether it's your health, relationships, your money, or making an impact in your community and the world, Well Woman Life has you covered. You've made a commitment to not settle, to use your voice, and to live your best life. Well Woman Life offers annual memberships, workshops, and retreats to support you. Check out wellwomanlife.com/Facebook to join our growing community. Now back to the show. My guest today is Elsie Escobar. She's a 10-year plus veteran in the industry and inductee to the Academy of Podcasters Hall of Fame. She brings a unique perspective to the podcast industry by focusing on empowering the voices of women, particularly women of color. On the show, Elsie and I talk about how being an avid podcast listener helped Elsie become a better podcast host herself, what we can learn about privilege and race relations from podcasts, and how her sleep schedule helps her stay on track. You can find more information and links about this show, as well as this week's giveaway, at wellwomanlife.com/012show. I want to let you know that I'll be in the Netherlands in March, speaking at the Women's Economic Forum on International Women's Day on March 8th. I'm super excited. I'm thrilled that I get to speak about this program that I developed called Family Friendly Business Award. And I'm also speaking on women's leadership. So two different tracks. And I'll be interviewing some women while I'm there and bringing back those interviews for this show. So lots and lots going on there. You can also continue the conversation with us in the Well Woman Life community group at wellwomanlife.com/Facebook. Now to my interview with Elsie Escobar. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you. Thanks for having me.
I am so excited to talk to you. You are like one of the podcast stars of podcasting, someone who a lot of people look up to, get a lot of information from. You're a leader in the industry. You've won awards for your work in podcasting. So super excited to talk to you on my podcast.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah. So Elsie, I want to start, you know, in the introduction, we heard all about your bio and your titles and all of that sort of thing. But I really want to just back up and ask you, who are you in the world today? Who is Elsie?
Oh my gosh, look at that question coming right off the bat. I am I'm a mom. I'm a mom that's speaking up. Mm-hmm. I think that's how I would encompass myself right now, because it's you know, part of my work in the world now and podcasting, really focusing in on empowering women's voices and people who have impact to do in the world and to step into the world. Every time that I'm teaching the women that I mentor, it always comes back to the deeper connections I have as a mom right now with my little girls. Mm. And the recognition that it doesn't matter how smart I sound to all of my mentees, it doesn't matter how amazing I am to the rest of the world if I can't model that in these small details with my daughters. Mm. And to really embody that in our everyday conversations. And it's becoming clearer and clearer now that my oldest is 9 and she can mirror things back to me where she will say things, Mom, you're always looking at that phone, or I've told you 3 different times and you didn't hear what I said. And when you have little beings saying things like that to you and you are connected to some other thing that isn't in real life in front of you, that to me right now is something that I want to address. Mm. It's not acceptable.
Yes, I love that. And so how old is your other? You've got a 9-year-old and...
Yeah, I have a 9-year-old and a 6-year-old.
Oh my gosh, almost exactly like me. I have a 6 and an 8.5-year-old.
Yeah.
So a kindergartner, kindergarten and third grade.
Yeah, yep, absolutely.
Yeah, so I completely relate to what you're saying. I mean, you just sort of embody all of those things as a parent into your life and into your work. And it becomes so incredibly important to walk the walk, right?
Yeah, walk absolutely.
Walk the talk, yeah, or walk the walk.
I know, whatever. We want to just do it and match up.
Okay, so I want to dig into a little bit about what you just said. And you mentioned empowering the voices of women. What does that mean for you in your work? How do you do that?
I think, you know, especially within podcasting right now is being seen primarily as a vehicle for sharing. I guess now it's kind of shifted a little bit too, because now we have a lot of public media coming in, radio people coming in who are producing these incredibly high-end, very edited productions that have teams of, you know, 10 plus working on them that are really fantastic and powerful. And then we have a lot of people who have really gotten into podcasting because it does have the dream of worldwide reach and to provide another avenue for what you have going on, right? For a vision that maybe you have, for a message that you want to get across as a marketing tool or something along those lines. But I view podcasting as something much greater than that, which is a powerful way to impact culture and society and the way that we communicate with one another. And I feel women's voices at this moment can be heard in a way that isn't filtered, and that large numbers or a huge reach, like how you view, you know, like you see a lot of people like, I have so many thousands of downloads and all this kind of stuff. I am much more impressed and much more impacted by women who are solid in what they're bringing to the world and how they are impacting the society and the cultural cultural ways of being that no longer serve us by sharing their truths. And it also serves podcasting, and especially the voice itself, the physical voice itself, helps us connect back into our physical world in both by just the voice, you know, that you hear, as well as by you sharing your voice actively behind the microphone. So my challenge for a lot of people is that you don't have to have a, in quote, successful podcast to reap the benefits of what podcasting can bring to you, because the endeavor of podcasting brings back an immense amount of transformation for you.
That's so true. Okay, so if the goal is not only to have a lot of listeners and market things and all of that, and if the goal is to, you know, hear people's voices, in particular, you're talking about women's voices, how can that happen for women who might be out there listening, saying, oh, maybe I could do that?
Well, you know, what's really cool about podcasting is, like, one of the first things that I did it, or how I wanted to do it the most, is because I started to listen to so many podcasts. I always bill myself as a professional podcast listener because I just love it. I can't stop. I cannot stop listening to podcasts. And they were a lifeline for me for making so many powerful and empowering choices in my world because of what I always say, like, the voices in my head saved my life, you know, because they're literally, I had little like voices in my ears that were coming straight to my head. And it's how I began to have the dream, the possibility to speak, that I could do it. And in podcasting, I have found that the support system of podcasters has been by far the most supportive community that I have encountered. And when I said, I think I kind of want to do this. And, you know, I was all shy. I kind of want to do a podcast. Mm-hmm. So I had so many people that were just like, yeah, just do it. Just get behind the microphone. Just do this. And especially now, when I began, it was like over 10 years ago, but there are so many, what I see as free resources out there, particularly, you know, just to talk about She Podcast, which is like the podcasting group that we co-founded, my co-host and I, Jessica Kupferman. But what's lovely about She Podcast is that it's now a thing. It's now meaning not a thing as in like I created, but we started it and now it just does its own thing. It's, you know, we're over 8,000 women in there and there's so much support. Mm. It's lovely. Just adore it.
It has a life of its own, doesn't it? I mean,
yes, it does.
I'm a member of the group. So yeah. I'm in there as well. Yeah. So I see what's going on. I mean, I'm not in there all the time, but I do dip in and out and it's a great community and very supportive. Yep. So thinking about the different types of podcasts that you outlined just now, so there's, you know, the highly produced sort of NPR style podcast, there's the marketing type of vehicle podcast where people, you know, talk about making millions because I have a podcast. And then there are these other types of podcasts, which are literally women or men telling their stories in their own voice, which is so powerful, which is what you're talking about. What is it about that type of podcast? Like, what goes into that? Is it interviews? Is it women just talking? Is it women having conversations with each other? What are the types of podcasts that you see as sort of, you know, the best types of podcasts to do if you're going to go down that road?
Yeah, well, you know, it always begins with the mission, with your mission and your vision. And this is something that I keep on putting forth right now with everybody, the women that I've been working with, because all of us are moved to have to podcast. That's the type of person that I primarily call to me, mm-hmm. is the ones that are like, I have to do this. Like I have to. And so then with that feeling, then we start to really focus in on why you do what you do. And I'll give you just a couple of examples of what these sort of impact driven women are. One of my favorites is Adoptees On. I'm not an adopted person, but Haley Radke from Adoptees On just started to have like a very simple interview show with, she is adopted and she hadn't really heard other adoptees talking to each other. Mm. And she also only heard one specific type of story around adoption, which is generally a glorified or maybe very fairy tale like experience of a child that doesn't have the mom and dad, or, you know, he's an orphan for some reason, or he's given up, but then his another family comes and adopts them and everything is great. Mm-hmm. And so she, that was not her experience. And she felt that it was a disservice, especially for adoptees, to not really talk about the real feelings that come with being abandoned or being adopted and not having a place where you feel like you fit in. No disrespect to these families that adopted them, the adoptees, but they need a place to go. Mm. And so she's really created an incredible community where that is vibrant, where that is the conversation that she drives is around the reality of what that is. And it's more like a support system around that. You know, that's one thing. And then another one is Advanced TV Herstory. And Cynthia Bemis Abrams has created this incredible podcast where she'll go back and go back into seminal TV shows like that in the past, or maybe in now starting to dive a little bit more in the present. And she sees them through the lens of how these women's roles in TV at this time in this place influenced both society or were influenced by society. So she covers things like, let's see, like the Diana, like Diana Ross, I guess she was, I've learned all this from listening to her podcast. So I'm no fan. I was just like, what? So Diana Ross did this concert in 1984 in New York, and she did a whole hour on just this Diana Ross concert and the impact as a female leader that she had by doing that. Like, because it was raining the whole night, the songs that she sang, like what it took for her to be dancing there with the, you know, with the floor being all slippery, and how what an incredible concert that was and what that meant for women in at that time. She's covered all the women that covered Watergate, all the women reporters, and what that meant. And she goes really deep too, as in like even what they wore and like why they were wearing what they were wearing, in addition to obviously the commentary and who these women were and how amazing that was. I mean, she's covered so many different TV shows from that perspective, and it's another opportunity to cast light into something that you wouldn't have ever thought about for women in the world. So
give us the name of the two podcasts again, and we'll link to those in the show notes.
Sure. The first one is Adoptees On, and the other one is Advanced TV Herstory.
Advanced
Herstory, as in like all together.
Yeah.
Okay. Herstory. Yeah.
Okay.
Those are just some, but I have, but I'm serious. Like all of these women, I could go on and on about the incredible impact that they're having on their smaller community. So when I'm talking, you know, when we're talking about not like these great marketing things, like Haley is, she's a mom, you know, she has two young boys, and she just felt like she needed to have this conversation. It was, important. It was very important. And she runs this all by her little self. She's incredibly into it, like careful with her editing. She has slowly started to grow and has a Patreon that supports a lot of her ability now to start to even consider to outsource some things. And that's not a business like that. She didn't start this to, ooh, I'm going to do a business about adoptees. No, right. She just started from that, and Cynthia as well. So.
Yeah, often when you start with your mission and your vision, and you truly find that thing that your heart just is telling you you have to talk about, then if you pursue that, you know, in whatever way, say podcasting or other avenues, then eventually, usually, there will be some sort of you know, business opportunity out of it later down the road. But I think what you're saying is you don't start with that in mind. You start with, you know, who you are, what you want to offer to the world, and then see where that leads.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, you know, I also work with women too that have like practices, as in, I have one of my mentees her podcast is called Mom and Mind, and her focus, she is a psychologist, and she focuses on perinatal mental health, and her entire podcast is just based on the support of prenatal and postnatal mental health. And she has some really, really powerful conversations with either women that are going through this stuff or really trying to provide as much support for women during this time, which she feels are being underserved. And so, yes, so the conversation is there, but she also does this for a living. So it's her job.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know? So she makes money at it too. Well,
yes.
And
yes.
So just for everybody listening, the whole idea with podcasting is that it's this great equalizer, right? You no longer have to get on the radio or be accepted by mainstream media, yep. you can become your own media outlet, and just how powerful that is. What do you think about the whole net neutrality issue that has been in the news with the FCC trying to limit people, possibly people's access to different internet? I mean, there's just like different internet access issues there.
Oh my gosh, it's very disheartening at this moment. Of course, there are so many things that are so wrong, and I am a little bit disheartened. I'm sitting back to see how this plays out to some degree and into the realities of what's happening. Because at the time of this recording, there is a possibility of something not kind of going through just as of yet. I can't really pinpoint exactly what that is when I've been reading about that. But the bottom line is that this is an issue that I've been very vocal about before, actually, this whole net neutrality thing happened before in terms of podcasting, because a lot of us, again, viewing the data around those people who are listening to podcasts, who are and how they are listening to podcasts, the majority of the time that skewed slightly more towards the privileged few. Mm-hmm. And in that sense, I'm talking about the ability for them to be able to afford nicer smartphones, as well as having the ability to afford things like unlimited data plans or having Netflix and Hulu and all that kind of stuff. Whereas there's a larger portion of the population that don't really have that access. And if podcasting were to, at least before net neutrality even, were to grow, we would really have to address those issues. Like, we cannot just continue to serve those that have, but also educate those that don't, and also recognize, like, even as we're talking right now, one of the, you know, conversations that I told you is like, I have really unlimited bandwidth. I happen to be in a place right now where I don't have a choice. It's like what net neutrality would tell me. Like, there's no one. Like, I don't even have there's no free market here. It's just no market.
Right.
You're stuck. And so I have to make choices that are based upon the restrictions that I have around me. And there's so many people that have that, where the internet is their phone. And, you know, the consumption that they have isn't the type of consumption that you would think. So I feel it's going to impact, hopefully, not as bad, but it's the little things, even like uploading your media to your host, transferring the files to your editors. All of that stuff could possibly be impacted.
Yeah. Okay. That's a huge issue to follow. And we will definitely put some links in the show notes about that and where people can voice their opinion on that. There's a pretty easy way to do that. And Elsie, you know, we just have seen an onslaught of things in the news and in politics in our country that really impact women, and in particular women of color. And we also just had a very important election in Alabama at the time of this recording. It happened, you know, earlier this week, where essentially Black women, you know, saved the election, as far as I'm concerned, elected someone to Congress, to the Senate, who is not, you know, a pedophile. That is like a huge moment for celebration, which is a sad statement for our country. But anyway, to the point of women of color being arguably the most vulnerable in our communities, having the biggest disparities in terms of pay at work, having the biggest disparities in terms of health, how important is it to you to really support women of color to have empower them to have their voices heard?
It's one of the biggest things that I've been focusing in on with my work as well, to be able to highlight, because for all of us, you know, there's all women and then there's women of color as well, because there are certain aspects of being able to be behind the mic, which, like you talked about before, which is the great sort of equalizer, because one of the lovely things about being behind the microphone is that you actually don't see color. You could hear, perhaps, in the voice, and you can infer what the person would look like. But out of the gate, if you were to put something in your ears and listen, it actually brings you to a position of you are human and I am human. But at the same time, though, I think the way in which we can support women of color in our podcasts, or women of colors, period, in terms of their voices, if you have a podcast, is I believe it is your duty to look at your guest list, to look at the color of your guest list, and literally just go, well, you know what, I'm not doing so hot, or wow, I'm doing so amazing. And part of the problem, I feel, is that we get into our little silos, and we don't ever step outside of the people that we hang out with, nor try to find somebody that we don't really know. And usually the excuse is, well, it's really hard. And this happens a lot with speakers as well. It's mm-hmm. like, you need to have a woman of color speak, or you need to have a woman speak in your conference. Right. And, but I don't know any. Well, go find some.
I mean,
do your homework, step out of your comfort zone, open up, have conversations, invite. You know, there are so many incredibly powerful women doing massively powerful work, women of color who are changing, you know, just being inside of all the different places to mobilize so much. And I, you know, it just blows my mind that it's like, well, no, there's nobody. There's nobody.
Yeah.
No. That's not the case.
No. Okay. So let's talk about that for a minute, because I feel very strongly about this too. And so, one of the things that I have, well, basically the thing I have worked on for 20 years is women's health and rights and social justice as far as women. Mm-hmm. And I've made it a priority in my own podcast to have, a diverse array of voices on the podcast, including, Latina, Black, and Native American. And I live in New Mexico, where we have, you know, a real mix of cultures. And so it's a really big deal for me to commit to that. And actually, it can be really hard sometimes, because I'm inundated literally with Anglo women health coaches who, want to be on the podcast, which is great. But I tend to have to start limiting that, because otherwise I could easily fall into, oh, well, I'm booked. I don't really have time to look for anybody else. I've got all these people. And then I lose I lose the goal there of what I was trying to do. Mm-hmm. So, it has to be really intentional, right? So, talking about, conferences and podcasts and just anywhere where women are underrepresented, and particularly women of color. I was just looking at a podcast conference that's happening in Florida in February, and literally there are like 2 out of 25 keynote speakers that are women.
Yeah.
And I was just shocked. I mean, I'm not going to go to that, because that's not the kind of place that I want to be and spend my time and energy. So I decided not to attend, and nothing against their conference, but you know, it's just not inviting for women to really come and participate in. So what are some of your other tips to really be intentional about how to be inclusive and how to elevate voices of people that we may not know?
I think part of it is allowing yourself to listen is probably one of the biggest bits of knowledge that I can impart, is allowing yourself not to be the one that's going to be taking the seat of leader at times, but to really allow somebody else to speak and to listen. Also, at least for myself, getting educated about things that are uncomfortable has been really big for me, because I am a woman of color. I am Latina. I present white. And so most people look at me because I have the privilege of the color of my skin. I have a nice olive tone. Mm. And so isn't necessarily that you will put me in a specific place. So I have that. My hair is straight and it's long. So, you know, there's people who have thought that I was Native American. Mm. There is a slight, you know, exoticism to me. But again, it is sort of like the privilege of not knowing where she's from. She could fit here, she could fit there, kind of thing. Mm. And part of it is my recognition that that's actually, that is a privilege. That's really big for me to see that for myself, not to just, to understand what that is, was huge. And part of the way that I started to learn about some of that stuff was through podcasts as well, through specific podcasts that I was listening to, because I wanted to learn more about race relations and racism and the way that we deal with one another. And what exactly does it mean to be a woman of color, right? I've always had my identity be, I am a Latina woman. That's always been something that I lead with. But it's never really stopped me from getting to where I was, because again, is what's called temporal colorism. So what happens is there are certain times in society where you are sort of given a pass as a person of a diverse person during certain parts in history. But simply because that's what's happening at the time. Mm-hmm. But then things change and then you go back to where it is that you belonged before, right? Something that you can see that this happened sort of like in the past, obviously in massive ways, would be like during World War II, where Jewish people, even though if you just, you know, if you look at the Jewish race, you see people whitish, you know, more white. And so, but there were, and they were kind of at that time in World War II, being Jewish was horrific, right? Obviously. But there was a time when it changed. Before World War II, that wasn't the case. And so people are given a pass in a lot of different places within history, but that doesn't take away the racism around it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's why it's temporal. And so that's been a lot of big learning that I've had to sit there and to see also perceptions of my own people that to recognize my own privilege because I have lighter skin. Mm.
Yeah. Okay. So I love your tip here about listening. I think a lot of people could learn from that when it comes to trying to develop relationships with people who are not exactly like you. So listening is huge. I don't think people listen enough. I think we tend to talk and not listen. Another tip might be to ask people for recommendations. So, you know, when we finish our interview, I might ask you, Elsie, do you know of any other Latina leaders in podcasting or hosts of shows or anybody else? They don't have to be podcasters, because I interview all kinds of women, you know, and I can ask you for recommendations. And I think, again, it's asking and then listening to what you have to say and then acting on it.
Yep. And the other thing, too, is you following up on it, meaning that once you get the name, it's about diving to at least for me, this is how I approach that. If somebody says, oh, you need to check this person out or this person out. One of the first things that I do is if they have a podcast, I subscribe. If I read what they write, mm-hmm. I follow them. I look at their work, you know, like I go all in because I want to get to know this person. And it's in that process that we get to just remember you remember. And you learn. And I think that that's been the biggest learning for me, has been that listening, to be able to watch the conversations and really allow myself to not respond in a way that I feel like for me to just impose my point of view on something. Because again, my experience is limited and I want to know more.
Yeah.
And the other thing that I have that's been very clear to me is that that privilege that I talked about before also gives me access. And it gives me an access that maybe another person doesn't have, specifically in podcasting. So the responsibility is actually on me to be able to step forward and cast light to these women.
Yeah. I love that. Okay. Elsie, I want to ask you, I need to shift gears here and move us into the segment that ends our show called Superpowers for Success. And I would love to ask you, what does success in life mean for you?
Oy. I think success, it's so funny because the being able to do what I'm doing for me is incredibly successful. To just speak into a microphone and inspire women to do what they do best already is the most successful that I feel. And being able to be with my family in the way that I am in this way is successful to me. So if I were to label that in some way, it would definitely be having the life, like having the everyday lifestyle that you want with the little things. Being able to wake up when you want, go to sleep when you want, mm-hmm. you know? Work with the people that you want,
yeah,
you know, take a vacation when you want, that kind of stuff.
Okay. And when did you know you were really good at what you do?
Oh my gosh. I think, you know, it hasn't been long. I think that part of it is that, you know, when people tell you, you're so good at this, or you should, you know, that's, you know, you really are. You know what you're doing. Mm-hmm. You're like, thanks. But you don't really know. Like, mm-hmm. You're like, thank you. But okay, that's so sweet of you. There's that element of not really letting that in. It's that imposter syndrome kind mm-hmm. of thing. It's like, no, not me. What are you talking about? So I think that that's been a very recent thing where I've finally sat back and said, you know what? I am good at what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I do have something different to offer that nobody else is talking about. Okay. Well, then, yeah.
Yeah. It's a really interesting process, isn't it? Because we're validated externally by what people tell us. And then sometimes we have a wonderful moment where we internally, we just know, we're like, oh my God, I'm such a badass.
And you, when I know.
And when you have that quiet knowing from within, that can be super powerful, way more powerful than anybody telling you.
Absolutely. And if I were to add a little something to that too, is really solid mentorship, somebody who can hold you mm-hmm. in the space where they don't give you a pass, but they don't push you, is really important too, where they can, somebody can hold and say, no, you know, you really are amazing at what you're doing. And you're like, I don't know. And they don't let you get away with that, but they right. also don't push you mm-hmm. to do it, you know? And that's been really huge for me. To have somebody that does that.
Yes, that's great. That's a great tip. Mentorship is so important. And Elsie, can you describe a personal habit that contributes to your well-being?
Going to sleep early and waking up early.
So what does that look like for you? What's early?
Early, anywhere between 9:30 and 10 mm-hmm. and waking up anywhere between, it depends on the day. Early is 5:30 for me, but that's usually not the case. Somewhere between 6:30 and 7 mm-hmm. is where naturally it comes out. So the fluctuation of that, I think that that's been possibly the biggest, most powerful habit that I developed. Again, and then probably in the past 3 years.
Yeah. No, sleep is so incredibly important. I know when I get to sleep between 9 and 10, I wake up so much more refreshed and energetic at between, you know, 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning. And I think people underestimate how much we need good sleep. You know, we think, oh, let's just keep pounding out these, whatever we're doing until midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning. And it just is, it really impacts us, you know, not just our sleep, you know, not just the hour that we wake up the next morning, but really our whole ability to do what we need to do in our lives.
Yeah. Just the processes, the brain strength. Mm-hmm. It was a necessary thing. It's like, it's no longer healthy for me to do that. I don't know exactly what the studies are, but you know, when you have like sleep deficit, it's not like if you lose like 4 hours of sleep, then you can make up 4 hours of sleep the next day. It's like,
right.
It doesn't work that way. There's like a level of compounded.
Yes, exactly. Thing that,
yeah. And so I lost so much sleep because we made choices at home where, mm-hmm. you know, we had a family bed and we co-slept and, you know, nursed till whatever, like I nursed 7 years straight. So then like mm-hmm. all of that like sucked the sleep out of me. So now whenever I'm like, mommy needs to sleep, everybody leave her alone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. And that's about also prioritizing your needs. And there's so much there that we could talk about. But let me ask you, Elsie, what superpower did you discover you had only to realize it was there all the time?
Oh my gosh, your questions, holy cow, are superpower. I'm incredibly adaptable. Like I'm resilient. I'm as resilient as I'll get out. Mm. And it's, you know, who knew that I was so adapt? Like I can adapt to almost any situation for long periods of time. No matter where it is, I could like sleep on the floor. I don't have to have a bed. I could just sleep here. It's super cold. Okay, fine. It's super cold. It's like all of those little things that I feel, you know, I guess in the Western world and first world problems that you think about, I kind of get used to a lot of it. Like we lived with no central heating for a year and a half. Because we were living in a little cabin. We didn't even have, like, we had tile floors. And it like, at the moment that it's happening, I don't have any problems. Looking back, I'm like, how did we even manage that? That's insane. You know, we didn't have there was a point where we didn't have a car for a year and a half. We had no car. And now looking back, and I talked with my husband, and I'm like, how did we do that? We had a baby, like, we had just had an infant. Mm. And we had to get zip cars and we had to rent a car here and there. We had to borrow people's cars and we walked everywhere. I remember him walking on the bus with a car seat and the baby. And I'm like, how did we do that?
So that ties nicely into the next question, which is about resilience. What do you do when you have a setback? What, you know, when something, you know, arguably someone could look at your past situation and say, whoa, that is super challenging. Like, how did you deal with that? And you, in the moment, you just adapted and you figured it out and you just got on with it. How would you describe that? Like, how do you develop that resilience?
Well, one way was, I think, seeing it in my parents. At first, we are immigrants. We came to this country in 1981, and we came to this country with 5 suitcases, 1 suitcase for each of us. And my mom and my dad, you know, they were pretty, not well off, but middle class in El Salvador. You know, it's not that we were suffering or anything like that. Mm-hmm. We weren't like wealthy people. But when we came to the country, this country, everything changed. And I watched my mom have to learn to cook, have to learn to clean, how to take care of a house and be like a housewife with no support. My dad was working all the time. I watched them, you know, navigate having very, very little money. And to be able to watch that, I think I learned from that to see that they went through so much and that we were still together and everything was okay. Also, they're very strong, faithful people. And to see their unending faith has been really powerful because they always taught us that we were connected to something much greater than ourselves, mm-hmm. right? And that's how I translate that now whenever I see in terms of setbacks. Yeah, I get super scared and it's scary and I get anxious and anxiety and all of the stuff that makes you feel like the world is ending. But I feel that it's okay to be all right there. And then you just very slowly start to make yourself get yourself out of it. I'm not sure where that comes from. And I'm thinking that it goes back to the resilience of the people. Like mm-hmm. I keep thinking like it's in my DNA, you know, it's yeah. where I come from. It's like where the people we strive, we work, we're hard workers, right. we just do it. We get through it. We survive. And it's that.
So yeah. Elsie, what advice would you give your younger self, say 10 or 15 years ago or longer? I don't know how old you are, but
I would have me not be so reliant on men in my life, because, or maybe even to start to think that the romantic side of love, to kind of let go a lot of that dream. Mm-hmm. Because that does exist. I mean, I totally love it. And I love my husband very much. I mean, he's an incredible human being. But, and I'm so lucky to have him. I mean, it's insane. But as my younger me, mm-hmm. I did not make the best choices when it came to relationships. And part of it was that there was way too much focus on the man saving you, in at least in my culture and the way that I mm-hmm. was raised.
Yeah.
Where, you know, the stories that you see, all of the fairy tales and all of the TV shows and all the weddings and mm-hmm. all of that stuff is so, it's kind of setting you up to want that. And I didn't realize how deep it was inside of my psyche that I kind of thought like, I want to have that. Maybe I would say, I guess if I were to be succinct, is to fall in love with yourself.
Oh, I love that.
You know, as deeply as you would anybody else. And that's what I found. I mean, now in my 40s, and it's kind of, this is super cheesy, but like when I hear back all those love songs, like in my teens or mid, you know, in my mid 20s or something, the mm-hmm. love songs that you were like pining over the boyfriend or the boy that never looked at you or whatever, mm-hmm. and those sad songs, or even the super in-depth, beautiful love songs, I've started to recognize that they have a completely different meaning for me now, where I can place myself as the other side of it. So these love songs are for me. Mm. And it makes me feel so good because I'm like, I'm so worth it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you've clearly done a lot of personal growth and transformation work because you have developed that sense of self-love and self-worth that so many, you know, so many women are struggling with, really. I want to ask you, Elsie, your advice to your younger self. Do you think she would have listened?
Oh, gosh, that's a really huge challenge. No, I'm not sure. I do think that she would have. And again, I'm going back to the mentor thing. Mm-hmm. I think if I would have had a woman who was slightly older than I was, not even like that old, but a woman who is slightly older than I was that could have sat me down and told it to me straight.
Yeah.
I would have responded for sure.
Yeah. Isn't that funny? I think some of those aha moments, some of the big realizations, I think to myself, why didn't someone tell me this? It would have been so much quicker.
Right? But you know what? The only people that were saying that to me was like my parents. And who wants to hear that?
Right.
Right. And it was coming from a different place, not from a place of empowerment, but from a place of fear. As a parent, we don't want our kids to get hurt. So a lot of the time we tell them, don't do that because you'll hurt yourself.
Right.
Right. And, or don't do that. That's just, right. But I think if it would have come from a place of, hey, I totally get that that feels the way it feels, but there's all of this other stuff too, that's not coming from a place of fear, but empowerment. I want, you know, like more like if somebody would have said, you are so brilliant and powerful, you don't need this like at all.
Yeah. If someone,
you know, and then I, yeah.
Right. We need people to believe in us because
yes,
we need that in order to believe in ourselves. Elsie, we've talk a lot on the Well Woman show about, and I talk to women who are striving to work for political, economic, and social equality for women. And that actually is the definition of feminism. Do you identify as a feminist?
You know, I haven't until maybe starting now, because again, there's been, I was raised in a Latin American culture, in a culture that is very, was very, very strict, strict Latin American Catholic. And anything that had to do with a empowered woman was not seen as good because of the culture that you came from. You know, the ultimate mirror of who you want to be with or be like is the Virgin Mary, as she is in presented in as somebody who sacrifices most of her life for her son. And in this place of purity and acceptance.
Yeah.
And so that's something that was drilled into my head for years. And it's been really challenging for me to come to a place where it feels okay to speak up. And even now, like I feel that sense of resistance because it is, again, it is so much years of the same thing that has been part of my DNA for so long, to be able to see a different sense now and why it's important, and also to not disrespect, you know, because you don't do that to Latin American parents. Mm-hmm. You don't do things that you don't, that don't align. And the other thing is that you also, when you don't do things that don't align, you don't speak about it. So you just put it underneath the table. It's like if somebody would say like, well, she's, you know, she's doing that.
Right, right.
And so then like, we don't talk about it. They don't talk about it. Nobody talks about it. So it's not until now that I've started to be a little bit more outspoken. Just now. And I'm like, you know, in my mid-40s.
Yeah. And I would say a lot outspoken. I mean, you really don't hold back, right?
No. No, I mean, I've started to do a lot. Exactly. And I'm very specific about what I put out or how I say, because I want things to be relevant. But I do have to say that there are some places where I will be outspoken. Like, let's say, it's so funny. This is so weird. It's going to sound so bizarre. I can be very outspoken, like in social media, like on Twitter, or like in a conference, or I could be, you know, or obviously she podcasts or anything like that, where I'll, like if somebody needs a quote, if I want to have to go on a blog post or something, I'll post. But if I have to write on my own wall on Facebook, like my own profile, I don't do it there because my family's listening.
Oh, interesting. You know what I mean? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it's like that's a whole other thing.
Yeah. I think a lot of people struggle with that. That I'm glad you articulated it like that, because it's that whole sort of your persona of who you are, but then it's such an intimate level with social media now that you have, you know, you sort of try to figure out like, who am I in this space and who am I in this space?
Yeah. It's so weird. And there's a part of me that hates it. And there's a part of me that's okay with it, but I'm still like, I can't say that I'm content. I can't say that that it's where I want it to be. I feel a push pull where I'm like, why am I second guessing myself? And it literally is, it comes down to this. What will my parents think?
Right.
That's essentially it. That's the bottom question. from everything.
Yeah.
What will my parents think? What will they say? Because that's what they told me all the time. Every single time. What are they going to say about you?
Right. Yeah.
And oh my God.
Oh, wow. Okay. This has been a great conversation. I just want to end with one last question on a lighter note, which is, what are you reading right now, Elsie? What's on your nightstand?
Oh, my God.
Is it a tower of
books?
Look
at a question. No, you know, I just finished reading the Hunger Games trilogy, like literally a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, wow.
And I loved it. It was so amazing. So I have... Let me give you the, okay. So it's an interesting, oh, this book was great. I loved it. I just finished this one too. It's called The Fifth Gospel.
Oh.
And it is by Ian Caldwell. And I don't even know how I popped into it. It was one of those things where I was looking for something to read after The Hunger Games. And I thought like, oh, I want a mystery, but I don't want it to be like a crime novel, you know? And so I thought like, this looks kind of neat. And it is set in the Vatican, and it's about two brother priests that are over there, and somebody's doing some research and they find what is called the fifth gospel. But the fifth gospel is a sort of like bringing together the four gospels into one.
Oh, okay.
So that would be like the fifth. And so they are trying to prove whether or not the Shroud of Turin is real or not. And it's a, God, I got to tell you, it's a beautiful mystery. It's a mystery for sure, but it's so cool. I was so caught up in it. It kind of reminded me of those Tom Hanks books and movies, but not the books, but what is the one that the, oh my gosh, he's done all the, you know what I'm talking about. Everybody right now on the podcast, like listening, are like, I know what she's talking about. Like, Demon was like one of the things that the guy wrote. Oh my God, I forgot. Dan, is this something name? But oh gosh, darn it.
We'll look it up.
Yeah, we'll look it up. And so, but it was kind of like that, and it gave me. I just thought it was really great because it really did bring back so many memories about, or so much of Catholic lore and Catholic history and living inside the Vatican. Like, I never thought about the people who actually live in the Vatican, you know, like,
right.
like lay people who are there and all the stuff that's happening in there. And I don't know. I really enjoyed it. So that's that's on my desk. That's just finished that.
Okay. So. All right. We'll link to these because we're collecting quite the book list here from all the guests. Whoa. And it's a really interesting list of books that everybody recommends. So, Elsie, this has been so awesome. It's been such a great conversation. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you. This was awesome as well for me.
That's it for our show today. Remember, if you need support to live your Well Woman life, head over to wellwomanlife.com/Facebook to join us. Our monthly live event, Well Woman Drinks, brings women together to share our successes and challenges as women, leaders, moms, aunts, sisters, and all the other roles we carry. If you'd like to attend a Well Woman Drinks near you, or if there isn't one in your city yet and you'd like to start one, email info@wellwomanlife.com. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment and subscribe in iTunes and leave a review. This helps raise visibility, which is super helpful when it comes to producing the show every week. For feedback, comments, or just to let me know you are listening today, find me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram @WellWomanLife. I'm Giovanna Rossi for The Well Woman Show. Until next time, have a super powerful week.